And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yo, yo. Welcome to Stargazing, a show about the figures and influencers that surround the superstars in NBA culture. I'm Yovan Buha, NBA reporter at The Athletic. And joining us now is Aaron Larsoul. Aaron is a podcaster for the Lakers and the creator of All Access Lakers. He's formerly a producer for KNBR and Fox Sports Radio. He's also worked for the Trailblazers, first in stats and then in basketball operations. He's in Jeannie Buss's inner circle, which we'll get into. Aaron, thank you for doing this. How are you doing today?
Better than I deserve, brother. How are you? Thank you for having me.
But was that an accurate bio? Because I know you do a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, so people ask me what I do, and my answer is always, and you might be too young for this also, but what I always say is, do you remember the show Martin, the sitcom Martin? Do you know who that is?
I've seen it. I wasn't watching it in its heyday, but I've seen it.
Well, yeah, because you're too young. You're a baby. But for people my age or similar to my age, they get the reference. And what I always say is I'm Tommy. And Tommy is one of Martin's, on the show, he's one of Martin's best friends. Mm-hmm. And everybody assumes that he doesn't actually have a job because no one actually knows what he does. Mm-hmm. So I'm Tommy. That's what I say. Yes, there's a lot of hats and a lot of things, but I'm Tommy.
Let's start with this, because this is my favorite question to kind of pick your brain with. How and when did you fall in love with basketball?
So, you know, actually, baseball was my first love. I grew up in San Francisco, and baseball was my first love. I played baseball more than basketball growing up. But when did I fall in love with basketball? I was probably, you know what, I'll give you a definitive moment, and maybe okay. It was before this or maybe it was after this, but I was 9 years old, I think it was. And I said I grew up in San Francisco. So on Mother's Day in 87, when I was 9 years old, my gym teacher last minute gave me tickets to a playoff game, to a Warriors playoff game. They happened to be playing the Lakers. And it was the Sleepy Floyd game. The Lakers ended up winning the series. I think it was a 5-game series. And I think it was 3-1, or maybe it was a 7-game series and they won 4-1. But the one game the Warriors won was the Sleepy Floyd game, where he had, which is still a playoff record, he had 29 points in the fourth quarter. And it's against the, you know, the Magic and Michael Cooper, et cetera, Lakers. So let's say that that's the day I fell in love with basketball. But I mean, to be fair, it's probably, I fell in love with basketball as soon as I could start watching it, but that seems like a good specific day to say I fell in love with basketball.
And a bit of foreshadowing there, because you are a Warriors fan, despite wearing this Lakers shirt right now and working for the organization.
Yes.
I see you at every home game.
Yes.
You know everybody.
Yes.
You're on the floor, mm-hmm. around the team. Mm-hmm. But you grew up a Warriors fan. So can you explain the dichotomy there between the Warriors and the Lakers and your ties to both?
So, and you probably know this, I don't know who you grew up a fan of, but when you work in basketball, whether it's for a team, whether it's media, your fandom kind of dissipates, right? It has to. Yeah. But the truth of the matter is I grew up a huge Warriors fan, and I watched a lot of 25 and 57 Warriors team. The Warriors were the joke of the NBA, right? When I was growing up, the joke of the NBA was the Warriors and the Clippers. I grew up a Warriors fan. It's true. But that kind of dissipates when you work in the league, or when you either in media or for a team. So when I worked for the Blazers, it didn't dissipate. I was just plainly a Warriors fan. Now I root for the Warriors when it doesn't harm the Lakers, right? It's like, it has to be outside of the Lakers, but outside of the Lakers, I do root for the Warriors. I follow the Warriors most closely other than the Lakers. And I root for the Warriors when it's not, when it doesn't have anything to do with the Lakers. I used to travel with the Lakers. It was fun to go home to San Francisco and be able to go to games, which is okay. It's fine. But when the Warriors are here, I hate it, right? I just get a pit in my stomach. I don't like it. I don't want to be there. I didn't go when the Lakers beat the Warriors in the play-in game a couple years back. I just didn't go. There's no split allegiances. It's the Lakers are first, but like your heart is your heart and you grow up how you grow up. And I grew up rooting for the Warriors. So outside of the Lakers, I still root for the Warriors.
So if,
and I'm not one of these Warriors fans that, you know,
no, I believe
it was cute, right? And it became
look, you mentioned 87. I bet there's a lot of Warriors fans that don't even know who Sleepy Floyd is, right?
But it's always Lakers first. But a piece of my heart is with the Warriors, to be clear. And one of the ways, I mean, look, it's the worst kept secret that I root for the Warriors outside of the Lakers. It's the worst kept secret in Lakerland. But when I traveled, one of the ways in which I was able to hide my Warriors fandom is I sat on the plane across from Michael Thompson. So he and I are in the back row on the aisle. The whole plane is 2x2. So on the aisle, I was on the aisle in the back row. If you're facing the back to the right, I'm on the seat in the aisle. And he's to the left. I would just hang out with him and watch Warriors games, right? Because he's hanging out. I'm just watching Clay, right? Michael's watching Clay. I'm just hanging out with Michael watching Clay. But I used to, I would watch Warriors games with him because outside of the Lakers, I care, right? That piece of my fandom has not gone completely away yet. As I said, when I was in Portland, I was just plainly a Warriors fan. In fact, the We Believe team in 2007, though the Warriors for the first time in 14 years, 13 or 14 years, made the playoffs. And they made the playoffs on the last. They got the 8 seed, the team that beat Dirk and the Mavs, mm-hmm. the 1 seed. Dirk was the MVP.
Iconic team.
Yeah. The We Believe team. So Captain Jack and Baron Davis and Monte Ellis and, you know, those guys. And Al Harrington, Al Buckets. So I was working for the Blazers at the time. The last game of the regular season, the Warriors clinched the 8 seed. Haven't been to the playoffs since 93 or 94. And I went in the Warriors. I took my credential, my Blazers credential, and went in the Warriors locker room and like had Mikal Petras spraying champagne on me because
that's cared. A name drop right there.
Yeah. Mikal Petras. Yeah. I cared. Now it's harder and it's not harder. Now some of that has dissipated, but when it doesn't affect the Lakers, I still root for the Warriors.
So let's talk about your career. How did your mom bully you into an internship?
So I pretended to come to UCLA and I was here for a while and
I got to stop you right there. How do you pretend to go to UCLA? You're just walking around campus with like a UCLA sweatshirt on or what? Yeah,
basically,
what's going on there?
I just didn't. I didn't like school. Okay. And I
Fair.
Thought I was smarter than everybody else, including my professors. So I just wouldn't do it. Maybe okay. I was. I would not suggest this path for anybody else, but stay in school kids. I would schedule classes, in the afternoon and then I would walk by, I would happen to bring all my stuff and I would walk by the gym, the Wooden Center at UCLA. And I'd be like, oh, wait, the best pickup games are now. And the pickup games at UCLA are legendary. I'd be like, the best pickup games are now. So maybe I'll go hoop. Let me just go look and see if anybody's playing. Of course they were. And I always had my stuff with me. I wasn't any good at basketball. We decided I wasn't going to make any money playing basketball. And so I thought about being an agent. Hated school, was burnt out, went home back to San Francisco. And my mom said, you're getting an internship. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, yes, you are. And I said, no, I'm not. And she said, yes, you are. You start Monday. So my mom, our neighbor in San Francisco, worked at KNBR and got me a promotions and marketing internship, which are the people that, you know, like give out keychains and bumper stickers at games, Warriors games, San Francisco Giants games, etc. So I did that for a little bit and then kind of fell into, and we can talk about it if you want, but kind of fell into producing a show. It was just pure like luck, basically. Fell into producing a show, did that for a while and was all of a sudden an executive producer after I'd been there like 2 months, 3 months. Didn't know what I was doing. did it anyway, kind of got burnt out and had was all of a sudden an executive producer, the highest, you know, title, unless you're going to be on air, which I didn't have any aspirations to do at the time. I was already an executive producer and I didn't know what I was going to do next. And so I said, and I think I made $10 an hour in those days. This is like 2000, right? I'm making $10 an hour, living in San Francisco with another buddy of mine who's now at CBS HQ. We lived together in San Francisco and our rent was, we had a 2-bedroom, 2-bath place and our rent was like $2,100. And this is in 2000, I think it was. And I was making $10
an hour. Like, yeah, that's like the $6,000 now or whatever.
So I would give him an envelope. He had the place and I rented it from him or I subletted it from him. And so every month I would give him an envelope with $1,050 in cash, right, to pay the rent, which left me like $4 for the rest of the month. Luckily, it was in San Francisco and mom lived, you know, like 2 miles. So we would both always just go to the house and go eat and do laundry and all of that. So mom bullied me into getting an internship. I kind of got burnt out. I came back to LA for a minute and then just didn't want to do sports anymore. And the girl I was with at the time was from Portland, Oregon, or is from Portland, Oregon, I guess. I don't know. I make it sound like she's not around anymore. I don't know, but I would assume she is. And she was wanting to go home. She was from a suburb called Tualatin, Oregon, which is a little south of Portland, which happens to be where the Blazers facility is. And so I went there. Her mom is in real estate. So I went there to go be done with sports and go go do some real estate. In 2002, maybe it was, I moved up to Portland, Oregon to be out of sports to do real estate. And that's
How was that?
Portland's terrible. I hate Portland. I hate Portland. Obviously, you've been, you know, covering the Lakers. You've been to Portland.
I like visiting it. I don't know if I could live there, but I like coffee. I like burgers and I like beer. And I feel like they excel in all three of those categories. So
that's fair.
As far as like a few days, I like it. The weather, of course, for me.
Have you ever been to Huber's there?
No.
So Huber's is, it's definitely the oldest bar in Portland. I think it might be the oldest bar on the West Coast, but they have incredible Spanish coffees. They do it at the table and light it on fire in front of you. And
that's dope. I'll check it out next time.
Yeah. So I moved to Portland, having nothing to do with sports. I don't want to be a part of it at all. And to do some real estate. And through that, randomly, through real estate, meet Mike Barrett, who was the TV voice of the Blazers, isn't anymore. But Mike and Mike did the show for our did Blazer games for a while. Mike had done it with Steve Snapper Jones, RIP, before
Legend.
That.
Yeah.
So he says, he and I become friends, Mike Barrett and I become friends. And he says, and maybe after a year or two, he says, you know, like he knew my background and knew I knew the game. And he says, why don't you come work with me? And I say, no. I'm like just putting it off because I'm burnt out, right? I don't want to do it anymore. So I put it off. And finally he says, look, just come do stats with me. You'll get a seat to every game, every home game, you know, sit at the scorer's table. They'll pay you $250. What you notice, just like give me notes and I can say it on the air. I say no. And he says he's on my head about it for a while. And finally I agree to just go show up at games and like give him notes about what I see. So that was my, that was my first, like my entry into the world of the Blazers. I loved the team. I loved working for the team, which we can get into, but I hated the city. So if your initial question was, how was that? I was miserable because I hated Portland.
So you like going to work, but you didn't like, you like, you know, you hated all your time outside of work. Is that fair?
Yeah. So I tend towards darkness, like in my mood, right? Outside, like on the outside, it's everybody's, you know, right? I'm everybody's favorite and it looks like I'm always having fun. And that's true, but I tend towards darkness. And so the weather in Portland, the gray and the rain and the gloominess, like just didn't do great things for me. And I missed my family. I missed my like real true friends. I knew everybody and I made a bunch of friends, but it was also, my ex-wife now was from there. So it was kind of like her circle that I became friends with. So it was hard. I did make some friends that are still some of my closest friends to the, well, one of my still closest friends to this day, but it was, it was hard. I did not enjoy it. I loved working for the team. I loved basketball. I loved going to games, but it was the city just didn't, the city was not good for me, right? The gloominess, the darkness, the, how am I going to put this, lack of diversity. You know, there was nobody there that looked like me. If you consider Portland a major city, it's the whitest major city in the country. And I just, that it didn't do good things for me. So I did not enjoy it, but I did. I loved working for the team.
Ben, how do you parlay doing stats into working for basketball ops? Because I think that's a path that a lot of people would want to take. And that's kind of like almost one of those rare stories you hear of someone working their way up, getting a big break. Like, you know, that's not the easiest thing to do. So what went into that, and kind of what did you learn about that process?
Luck. Honestly, it's luck. Luck and timing. And people ask me about, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but people ask me about the Lakers thing, and it's a similar story. It's luck and timing. Yes, I'm good at it, right? Or at least competent. But the only way you get to show that you're competent or good is from the people. So basketball, fans don't really understand this or don't understand it at a core level. Basketball is a people business, just like everything else. Like, what matters is the people. I was down on the floor doing TV every game, and I just happened to start meeting people, players, you know, executives, whoever was down on the floor before the game. They started to get to know me, and I would say hi to them. We would have events or parties at people's house that I would go to and would meet people. It started, Kevin Pritchard was the GM at the time. He's the president in Indiana now for the Pacers, and who I am probably still closest with and became very close with is Chad Buchanan, who's now the GM in Indiana. He was the director of college scouting for the Blazers at the time. He was the interim GM twice. And he and I became very close after So for the Lakers, I don't say we. Like, I say we traveled, right? Because if I'm traveling, like, I didn't went on those trips. But as far as like the team itself, it just feels weird to me to say we because I don't play. But after we, as the Blazers drafted Greg Oden, and he had some challenges. He had a difficult time, right? He missed his whole first year, and he was struggling. And Greg and I became friends, and Chad just kind of asked me to just kind of keep an eye on him and help him however I could. So I did that. And then that turned into, can you help me with these other projects? Can you go home, go back to Cal and scout Damian Lillard, like that kind of stuff. So it just grew from that. And then do you know the site Cleaning the Glass? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ben Falk created that while I was with the Blazers. He was brought in by the Blazers. He was an intern like while he was, I think Maryland is where he graduated from. But while he was still in school, he came and interned for the Blazers and then worked for the Blazers. We called him Wiz because he like the analytics you see now, the second spectrum stuff and all the analytics you see now, all the play tracking, he was doing that. Like, he built a database to do that in 2008 or 2009. So early. Yeah. So I worked on that for a while, kind of with him. That's not fair. He did it, and I was one of the people that helped track him. And it was like a lot of self-scouting stuff that was proprietary and hadn't been done before. So I did that, and you know, it was kind of just whatever needs doing. But the real answer is, how did I do it? I couldn't tell you. It's the, like, I just met people. It was the relationships, and I got a chance because of those relationships and because of luck and timing.
You also put in the work. You know, I think don't sell yourself short. Like, I think you took on stuff that wasn't your responsibility, and you kept adding stuff to your plate. And I think that ultimately led to the role that, you know, you got now to your situation with the Lakers. But how do you go from Portland back to LA, sort of how that all ends up playing out? And then how do you meet Jeannie Buss?
So this is 2012. So it's like November, eight games into Dame's first season with the Blazers. My marriage is falling apart. And I decided I need to leave. I hate Portland. It's not doing good things for me. I love working for the team, but I hate the city. And my marriage is falling apart, and it's just bad. So I'm talking to my mom, And my mom says, come home, San Francisco. So I just say, this is bad. I need to get away from this. So I go home. I go to San Francisco. I'm 35 years old, I think. And I go home. I tell everybody with the team that I need to get away from this. I need to just be gone. I don't know what this is going to mean, but I need to leave. So I go home, November 12th or 13th or something of 2012. I think it's 8 games into Dame's rookie season. And I leave and I just go home. Not really with a plan of what it's going to be, but just I need to change this. So I go home. I end up getting divorced. And I always felt San Francisco is home to me, and San Francisco will always be home, but LA has always felt like home more to me. And my brother's here and my two closest friends are already in LA. So I don't know what I'm doing. And I start life over at 35, I think I was, which, like, as a man, that's a difficult thing, right? That's like, yeah. I left my house. I had condos that I owned, was renting. I leave the Blazers, all of it. And I'm just starting life over. And I moved back home and I moved back in with mom. And that's like, that's not great for your ego as a 35 year old man, but I knew I wanted to be in LA. So I would go, but I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything. So I would go back and forth between San Francisco and LA because I wanted to be in LA. So I would come down here for a week or two, stay with my brother, and then go back home because I didn't want to wear out my welcome. And again, randomly, like, one of my boys is at Fox Sports Radio. He's working at Fox Sports Radio. The dude that basically got me the job at KNBR in 2000 or 2001. And I come visit him. And he says, come to the studio. I say what's up to him because I haven't seen him in a while. He's taking me around. I think I'm doing like a tour of his office, just saying hi to people. It's going back and forth between San Francisco and LA. And like 2 weeks later, I get a call from a number I don't recognize. Answer it, which I don't advise doing, and I don't do anymore, and get offered a job at Fox Sports Radio. He had been taking me around, introducing me to people, Sammy, Sam Butesh, shout out Sammy. He'd been taking me around, like, and I'm interviewing basically and didn't know it at the time. He's gassing me up to everybody. So they said, do you want to come back to LA? I said, yeah. So I did that, came back to LA, and through that, produced a bunch of shows for a handful of years and met Jay Moore, and produced his show for a little bit. Didn't want to do it. Was told that I didn't have a choice. I said no. They said yes. I said no. They said yes. They said, you're going to. I said, I'm not, because it started with me doing some other weekend stuff also. I said, I will not. And they said, you will. And I said, I will not. And they said, you will, and we'll give you $10,000. And I said, I will.
There's always a price.
Yes. So I start producing Jay's show. And then he and I became very close through that. So I always say, like, when you're producing, I think it's important to be friendly with the talent, whoever you're producing, but not friends with. And I broke my own rule. And he and I became very close. And then he got a job doing a Rams the year the Rams, so 2016 I think it was, when the Rams came back to LA, he got a job doing, or not a job, he got a show on TV on ABC doing the Rams, like a variety show for the Rams. And he just said, like, hey, do you want to produce this? And I said, sure. Like, I've never produced TV before, but sure. Like, let's get it. And he brought me on. I didn't have to interview, I didn't do anything. Again, it's like luck and the people. So I went and did the Rams show. I produced the Rams show with him, or for him, I guess, for that season. Or actually, we got fired like 9-10 games in. But so I produced that, and through that is how I met Jeannie.
And then
you want that story?
Yeah,
the quick version. So Jay had a podcast called More Stories. I don't know if he still does it, where he would just interview people that he found interesting. Other comedians, actors, athletes, celebrities. I think he had like a spy that had defected from Iraq or something. Wow. Like, he just, whoever he found interesting, called More Stories. And he had Jeannie on. And they met doing that and became friends. And so one day we're on a Saturday night. This is when we did the show, the ABC show. So on a Saturday night, he says, "Hey, we got to do rehearsal. Will you mind grabbing somebody and like getting them through security?" I say, "Sure." Like, "Yeah, I got you." I go out to security, let this person on. This is the car it's going to be. They pull up. I don't know who's popping out. And a genie pops out of the car. Meet her, say hi, bring her in. And Jay and I had a dressing room. There was a live like audience for the show. Jay and I had a green room dressing room. So she went up to hang out in the green room. I say hi. I first meet her. The next week, she comes back to the show again. And my mom is in town. So I'm showing my mom around the studio, bring her up to meet Jeannie or just to like show her green room. "Mom, this is Jeannie. Jeannie, this is mom." My mom says, "Hi, Jeannie, nice to meet you." And my mom's a huge basketball fan, a huge sports fan, huge basketball fan. So probably knows who Jeannie is if you said the name, but not by face. They meet. "Hey, mom, this is Jeannie. Jeannie, this is my mom." And Jeannie says, "Oh, nice to meet you." My mom says, "Oh, what do you do?" And she says, to Jeannie's credit, and Jeannie and my mother, like when they met, they're the two greatest humans I've ever met. They're the two best human beings I've ever met in my life. And Jeannie says, "I work with the Lakers." They start talking. My mom's a big basketball fan. They start talking. Something about Kobe comes up. And my mom says, I'll never forget this. My mom says, "Oh, we don't like the Lakers or in Kobe because we're huge Warriors fans." I go, "Mom, can we curse? Curse on this show?"
"You can curse."
I go, "Mom, will you shut the fuck up?" I'm like under my breath, "Shut up, mom, shut the fuck up." So we do that. They have that interaction. And then, so that's on a Saturday night. Tuesday, I'm sitting in my office at Fox and Jeannie texts me, "Hi, Aaron, I hope it's okay. I got your number from Jay. I wanted to see if you wanted to come to the game Friday." Yes, sure. Right. We do that whole thing. It was because, and say hi to your mom for me. So I text my mom.
I think your mom's the key to all of this.
She's unlocked it. Yes. But the reason why Jeannie invited me, on that Friday, you know, a few days later was because the Lakers were playing the Warriors and she remembered, right? And this is the woman that owns the Lakers and remember some dude that she met. Was a Warriors fan because his mom ran her mouth and said, "You know what? Like, I think this would mean something to him." So this is, yeah, probably in, I don't know, November or something, December of 2016. My brother and I go to the Lakers game because Jeannie invited me. She and I have become very close to that. She kept inviting me every once in a while and I kept going. And then Jay and I started the podcast, the official Lakers podcast, which I have kept doing through a few other co-hosts. It's on hiatus currently. I think we're going to bring it back for next season. But Jeannie kept inviting me and I kept saying yes, is really the story. And then now you see me every game, I guess. I traveled with the team LeBron's first year, did the podcast from the road. But that's, again, like, am I good at it? Maybe. I hope so. But I got lucky. I got a chance and I got lucky. The reason I got a chance was the relationships, the timing, and just like good fortune. And again, that's why I tell people it's a people business. Every business is a people business.
What was it like flying on the team plane?
So it's really cool. It's very cool and it is a very closed environment. And the bus and the plane are very like closed environments. And when I first started doing it, it's a group of people that have been doing this together, you know, 50 or 60 people that have been doing this together for however many years. And so you feel like an outsider, right? And you feel like people are looking at you funny, like, who is this dude? What the fuck is he doing here? And I felt like that too, a little bit at first, but like shout out John Ireland, because he was probably the first person that made me feel like I belonged, like I was part of the group before I actually was part of the group. And people think it's very glamorous, the hotels and the bus and the plane. And I would say, and fun, and I would say it's more cool than it is fun. It is really cool, but it's some of it's fun, right? Going to get to see flying. You don't have to go to the airport. We kind of just like drop your bag somewhere and walk on a plane and it's a chartered and it is, it's cool. But all those, I think we flew 55,000 miles in like 5 months. And that's hard, right? You wake up and you do this, right? And mm-hmm. You, as a beat guy, it's much worse for you. I have respect for you guys because there are times where I'm just like worn the fuck out. I like you wake up, I don't know what city I'm in, I don't know what day it is, and I don't have to fly or didn't have to fly commercial. So I don't know how you guys do it, because those miles count, right? We have it as easy as you could possibly have it, but those miles still count. So it's very cool, but it's hard, right? It's hard on your life. It's hard on the people you care about. It's hard on your body. It's difficult, but it is very cool.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son Evan continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
I guess, is it from the podcast that you're at every game? Was that the kind of connection? Obviously, you mentioned becoming closer with Jeannie and Jay are engaged now. And
they are.
But you know, since I've been covering the teams, this is my third season on the beat. You've been at every game. You know, it's funny because my first impression, I don't even think I've told you this.
Like, no, but I like this.
My first impression of you is just like, who is this guy? Like, he's just walking around, like he owns the place, and like he's sitting in Genie's section and he knows all the beat writers, but I don't know him yet. And you know, I see you're given like Trudell sneakers and different stuff, and I'm just like, who is this guy? Then I got like, so I kind of had a perception of you, and then I got to know you.
Yeah.
And you are totally different than the perception, the outward perception I had.
Yeah.
But I guess like what, like walk us through a typical, game night for you from what you can remember.
How big is your reach here on this show? I was going to say, is my mom going to listen to this? are any of my guests, my game day guests, going to listen to this? So I usually pull up 2 hours before the game and go to what is now called the patio. There's been different rooms, but it's called the patio. It's possible I have a guest with me. And honestly, that's the best part of all of this. I'm like, we're joking about this, saying a guest to be able to give people this experience, to come to games. I'm fortunate enough to have a ring, a championship ring, to be able to share that with people, like different fans that are around, kids, to be able to bring them down and take pictures at the, all that kind of stuff. Like whatever, all the access that I'm fortunate enough to have is what fuels me for all of this, to be honest with you. I know that people have the perception of me that you feel like, you know, before you actually met me, but my life is lived for other people. And I believe that that is the right way to live. And so to be able to share this experience with people is it's because it's magical to them is really what fuels me. So yes, I do have guests, we'll call them, that come to the game with me. But I also, like, my brother will come with me. My best friend Marcus will come with me. My sister comes sometimes, or to be able to share it with, like, kind of random people, not girls, like, put that aside for a second, just to be able to bring people and have them be able to experience that is completely magical. Because it's magical to them, it is the best part of all of this for me. So I get there like 2 hours before, usually go in what's now called the patio, the VIP room or one of the rooms, and get something to eat, kind of talk to people, see who's in there. And then I usually will have a conversation with Rob. Rob will usually come in there, and he and I will talk about whatever's going on. And then I like to come out before tip off. You know, we'll eat, and there can be beverages if you happen to be drinking that day, which I used to, now much less so. But then I'll come out and say what's up to you guys. Usually I'll do a little pregame stuff where I kind of just go and watch our guys, what's happening on the floor, who's working with who, what are they working on, just to kind of have a general sense of it.
Make fun I'll say of what's JP. Up to you.
Yeah, I give JP a bunch of shit. I give JP shit for being the worst, having the worst field goal percentage defense in the league. And he says he's just building confidence. That's what he's doing. That's a funny story.
John Pastorek, this.
Yeah. So here's another funny story. Actually, this I can tell. It was a road game I was watching, and there was something about a challenge that I didn't like because I thought it was the wrong time to use a challenge. I think it was Thomas Bryant had gotten called for a foul. And so I put on Twitter, like, you know, I think Lakers will probably win this challenge because I don't know that it's a foul, but I disagreed with the usage of it, right? And sent it out on Twitter, like, it wasn't a big deal. I don't have much of a Twitter following. Who cares? I get a text later that night with my tweet that says, respectfully, fuck off. And it's from JP. And he says, I'm in charge of the challenges, which I had no idea. I didn't know. And he was like, and I'm 8-1 on the year or something like that. This was earlier this year. So now he and I have a thing where if there's a play to challenge or that gets challenged, maybe get challenged, I send him a text during the game. Like, who gives a fuck what I think about a challenge? But like, I just tell him, oh, you should have challenged this one, or glad you didn't challenge this one, or hey, challenge this one, I think you're going to win it. Like, and he's not going to see it till after the game. So we have a thing about that. So I give before the game, I give JP a bunch of shit, watch kind of warm-ups, go back, have some more food if I want, have a couple beverages, and see who's around, hang out some. And then my favorite, for whatever reason, it's kind of my thing. My favorite part is, it's called, you know, the white, well, this is going to sound bad, the white sheet that comes down. Sounds very KKK, but that's not what I mean. So in pregame, there is a sheet that comes down from the scoreboard that they project stuff on. And it's called a kabuki. I learned that it's called a kabuki. So
did not know that.
Yeah, it's called a kabuki. So I, for whatever reason, it's kind of become my thing, is I stand in front of my seats, like basically on the court, and film the kabuki. I don't know why I like it. I just do. And then just directly after that, the Lakers do their introductions. So I film that. I don't know why I film that. That's always in black and white for some reason. I don't know. But I'm really into that part of it. And then once the game starts, I go back to my seat and pay attention and kind of take notes sometimes and focus on whatever else I'm focused on, walk around, make sure everybody's having a good time because that's really important to me. That's what, when you see me doing whatever it is I'm doing. But I also, for home games, for me, it's more of kind of like an overall feeling, kind of an overall like overview of what's going on, because there's lots of stuff on TV that you can't see, right? I want to see how people are interacting with each other. Look, I'm walking around a lot. There were times in the past where I would consume lots of Hennessy. So it's more for me at home games, not anymore. For me at home games, it was, and it still is, it's more about kind of the stuff you can't see on TV and getting like an overall feeling of stuff. And then I'll go back and watch, I record all the home games and go back and watch them for the basketball. You know, we take some pictures, whoever's with me or whoever I know or see there, you know, we'll take some pictures on the court after the game because I want to make sure that everybody has a memorable experience. I go home. Now I'm driving to games. I haven't before a couple months ago, I didn't drive to a game in like 3 or 4 years, but now I drive to the game. So I go.
Smart decision.
We've made some lifestyle changes. So now I go, you know, and drive home or drive to wherever else I'm find myself that evening. I'm lucky enough that home games are generally like a fun experience, and it, yes, I'm working, but it's not so specifically work. And to be able to share that is magical.
For the majority of people who have not been able to step foot inside the patio, could you paint the scene of what the, I mean, I've been in there a few times and,
yeah,
you know, you look to the left, it's Genie Bus. You look to the right, it's Bad Bunny. You know, you look around, you see agents, you see other celebrities and actors, and just what's everyone's mingling, drinking, having fun. Like, what's the patio like?
So the patio is great. And look, it's just like, again, it's just like good luck and timing. So to be able to do that is so much fun. Basically, it is, I call it the best party in LA, but it's basically a place where people can go and meet and hang out, have dinner, have drinks if you're so inclined before the game, and then at halftime also. So it's, yeah, every game, it kind of switches the aesthetic of it, what it looks like switches every game. And it's just a place where we all kind of hang out before the game and at halftime and have fun and enjoy the scene. But I call it the best party in LA because it is the best party in LA. At least it's the best one I've ever been to. But it gets, you know, it gets cracking pretty good, like later in pregame, and then halftime is usually pretty nuts. But before the game, like earlier before the game, which is, I said, I get there 2 hours before the game, it's kind of quiet, and it's a place that we can use as, or not we can use, but a place that gets used as, you know, like a meeting place. As I said, like often I'll talk to Rob in there because nobody's in there. And he and I will just, you know, kind of BS, talk hoops, and just say what's going on with the team. But yeah, it's the place where we congregate and hang out and have dinner and have some fun before the game and then at halftime.
So you mentioned talking with Rob, and mm-hmm. obviously you're close with Genie. If fans don't like a move, can they point the finger at you?
Well, they certainly do. with my paltry following, they certainly do. You know when that started, actually, was like, I don't really do anything. I just, when somebody asks me a basketball question, I give my opinion. I give my advice. Like, no, but I don't actually do anything. But do you remember the Darren Collison? Yeah, I think this was, you were on the beat there. Do you remember the Darren Collison?
Yeah.
So he came to a game.
The fling with Darren Collison.
Yeah. So he came to a game. They were talking, him, his agent, Rob, Genie, I think Kurt was in there, before a game, that game where everybody saw him. He came to the game. And so we didn't go in the patio then. Like, I was going to go in and I saw they were having a meeting and I just didn't. Right. So, there's a picture that somebody took from outside the patio, inside the patio, like of them meeting, that started going around, and a bunch of people started texting me because it was on Twitter, and like, oh, did you know about this, or do you know this, or whatever. And obviously I saw it, but I'm not saying anything, right? And we come out at, I'm sitting in my seats, and he comes out for the third quarter, I think Darren does. So now everybody noticed, right? I think they showed him on the TV broadcast. Now everybody knows he's there. When it became a thing for me, so there's pictures taken and fine. When it became a thing for me is McMiniman took a picture from his seat where you guys sit, which is, I don't know, 40 feet from where I sit, right? So he takes a picture that has me in it, that has Darren in it, that has a bunch of people in it, but I'm in the picture. And so it becomes a story. So McMiniman does a stand-up for SportsCenter after that, and they use his picture. Like, so now everybody sees me on TV, and now it's a big thing. And it's on Twitter. But he didn't tag me, so people that know me can see me in the picture. And Pete Zayas, Coach Pete, Laker Film Room, tags me in the picture and says, Oh, if you ever wondered, like, if at Aaron Larsoul is on the inside, like, here you go. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Now my mentions.
It wasn't the way you imagined getting outed.
No. Now my mentions are a disaster, right? Everybody's like, well, tell him after he didn't sign, oh, it's your fault. And tell him that Darren owes you whatever for the seats, or he owes you for this much for the dinner or whatever. I'm like, just leave me out of it. So since then, people do. I do hear about it when people don't like moves or don't like non-moves or want something to happen. I definitely hear about it on Twitter. Like, tell whoever to do this, or why did you do this, or so. Yeah, now it's a thing. Unfortunately, but I have no power. Lakers Nation, Lakers fans, I have no power. I don't do or not do anything. I make no decisions. I give my opinion when I asked, but I make no decisions.
Looking back on your career, what is one piece of advice for someone who wants to follow in your footsteps? And
don't.
aside from the luck, because you talked about the luck, and
yeah,
obviously
yeah,
that
yeah,
plays
yeah.
a big part of it, but you know, I think you're selling yourself short.
Yeah. So people say all the time that, like, and again, right? Like, if I'm really being honest here, my life looks a lot better than it is. Like, it looks much cooler than it actually is, right? I tend towards darkness, but I admit that it looks very cool. And so what I tell people, I don't like G-Eazy. But I do like him in, like, when he's featured on another song. Like, I don't know that he can carry a whole song, but when he has a verse here or there. And so in one of the songs that he's featured on, I think it's just a feature. He says, like, there's a line about people wanting to be him, or, you know, want to do what he does. And he says, be careful, this is not for everyone. So yeah, that's the reality. But, if you want to be me, I don't know why you would want to be me, because you shouldn't want to be me. I did say, like, a lot of it is luck, right? That's luck and it's timing. And I mentioned that it's all relationships, right? It's all, every business is a relationship business. Agents and GMs, that, like, who gets signed, who gets called up from the G League, that's about relationships. Trades is relationships. You know, you have a better relationship with some of the players versus, you know, some of the other guys, you'll be able to get better quotes and more from them, right? It's all relationships. So that's what is going to give you a chance. But even with the luck and the timing and the relationship building, and do that authentically, it can't be transactional. You have to really do that authentically. That's what's going to get you the chance. But you have to do the work to at least be competent, to be good, to take advantage of the chance once you get the chance from the relationships. So, like, do the work. Make sure that you have something that isn't easily replaceable, kind of a niche or something that you are known for, that you are good at, and build your relationships authentically, not transactionally. Build your relationships however you can, so that once you get that opportunity from the relationships, you can take advantage of it. But honestly, like, 90% of it is relationships and luck and timing. That's what separates me, I guess. There are 1,000 people that could do what I do. Better than me, maybe, I don't know. But they didn't get the chance. And the reason I got the chance is mostly luck. I wish I had, like, a better like, I mean, but roadmap, but that's the truth.
It's the truth. Like,
yeah, the truth is I'm
luck
lucky.
Plays in, yeah, you know, luck's played into my career. Like, yeah, yeah. I think anyone, as you work your way up, like, luck is always an element. But I think, look, like, your IG bio says it. What have you done for someone else today?
That is what is important.
That's your credo, and I think that's what's helped you advance throughout your journey.
As always, the question remains: what have you done for someone else today?
What is Aaron doing in 2026?
Am I going to be alive in 2020? What year is it? 2023.
Three more years.
Yeah. I'm so lucky to get to do what I do, and get to kind of not have a real job. I've started All Access Lakers. I work on some other stuff. So hopefully just the growth of the stuff that I'm doing, and hopefully I'm still with the Lakers growing that. The official Lakers podcast is back, and we're building that with True. and helping however I can to get another ring internally. And like, more importantly than all of that is, to me at least, more important than all of that is hopefully I make a positive impact on someone's life. And if it's just one person, that's okay. And I'm very lucky that I get to use basketball and the Lakers as a vehicle to do that. So hopefully touching some lives. That sounded creepy. Hopefully impacting some lives positively with the Lakers, through the Lakers, growing, you know, all my little entrepreneurial stuff that is basically all based around basketball. Some of my food stuff too, but basically all based around basketball. And hopefully it ends at some point with the Lakers having one more than the Celtics. And my niece, I have a 7-year-old niece. Actually, she'll be 8. I don't know what today is, but on the 27th, she'll be 8. And as she will tell you, the 2020 championship ring belongs to her. So I don't have any kids. I think it's probably unlikely at this point because I'm old. It's probably unlikely. Is it? It's probably unlikely. So that ring belongs to her, right? That's kind of part of my legacy, is her having a championship ring. And she's a little spicy little 7-year-old, and she will tell you it's her ring. So hopefully one more, so that my nephew Theo, who will be 5 in April, we need to get him one. So,
and then you gotta get a third one for yourself.
Nah. Well, I mean, sure. Sounds good. That's what I say. I'm like, hey, I guess I do need one. I need to keep one. So hopefully another ring in the next 3 years, and hopefully impacting some people's lives and using basketball and the Lakers to do that and keep doing what I'm doing and growing it.
Where can people find you, and anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Where can people find me? You know what I always say?
I ain't tough to find. In the patio.
Yeah, you can find me in the patio, and you can find me at games, and people come up and say hi to me at games all the time. And I love it. I think it's like, and people want to take pictures with me, which is weird. I don't get it, but like, I'm happy to do it. It just feels weird to me because I don't understand why anybody would want to. But come up to me, say hi at a game. You can hit me on Instagram or Twitter. It's creatively enough, it is my name, at Aaron Larsuel, 2 A's and LARSUEL. And if you're coming to a game, if you're coming to a Lakers game, it's only 4 left, I think, but send me a DM, send me a message, on Twitter or Instagram, and, you know, come say hi and, join the streams. You've been kind enough to come hang out a couple times, and we've had fun. All Access Lakers. So playback.tv/All Access Lakers. We do game streams and conversations and hang out, talk Lakers. So playback.tv/All Access Lakers or at Aaron Larsuel on all the platforms that I don't use. You have to teach me TikTok. You're still supposed to teach me TikTok.
I will.
Because I'm bad at social media. I'm bad at social media. I'm bad at it. Okay.
I don't know.
How am I gonna put
You know how to use DMs.
I do. I am bad at social media for like the powers of good. Let's say that. Like, for brand building, I'm bad at it.
The force. You gotta use the force positively.
That's right. Are you a Star Wars guy?
A little bit.
Okay, yeah, I love Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars guy.
This was great. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I learned a lot. I know you couldn't share everything, but but no, I'm sure that this is an amazing episode, and that this was great.
I appreciate you, brother. Anytime.
Hey, As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.